Good morning, church family. Today is part two in our series on the prophetic voice. If you missed the first one, let me catch you up. The first lesson was all about, well, let's see if some people here remember. It was all about how God's speaking to us, so we need to hear the prophetic voice. Hear and listen to the prophetic voice. That's great. That was the first thing. The whole point of the lesson is God is speaking to us. God sends us messengers, and by messengers I mean prophets. When you hear the word prophet, think messenger, and he's trying to get a message through that. God, it's exciting that God talks to us, that God's directing us. The question is, if God's speaking to you, are you listening? And so the whole point of that lesson was about, you know, let's keep our ears to the ground. Let's keep our eyes open for what God's doing, what kind of messages he's trying to get to us. We ended with this scripture from 1 Thessalonians 5, starting in verse 19. It says, "Do not quench the spirit. Do not treat prophecies with contempt, but test them all. Hold on to what is good and reject every kind of evil." One of our applications from last week was like, let's not be so quick to dismiss voices that we don't want to hear. Let's not be so quick to discount news that we don't want to hear because we think it's bad news or it's going to confront us on something that we don't want to be confronted on. To do that, who knows if God's trying to speak for us, and to try to dismiss that voice, we might be quenching the spirit. But just because we're listening for the prophetic voice, just because we want to hear the prophetic voice, doesn't mean that we have to accept or believe everything that we're told. And so we ended with this. It's don't quench the spirit, but test everything. Hold on to what's good and reject what's evil. And I promised that this week we'd be talking about how does that work? How do you test things? How do you know the real deal prophetic voice and the counterfeit prophetic voice? False prophets, false teachers. We're going to talk about that. So today's lesson is all about distinguishing the prophetic voice. There it is. See. Now, Jesus even warns us about false prophets and false teachers in Matthew 24. This scripture is already being read, but he talks about all kinds of deceivers, all of these potential people who might mislead and deceive us. At that time, if someone says to you, "Look, here's the Messiah," or "There he is," do not believe it, for false messiahs and false prophets will appear and perform great signs and wonders to deceive, and if possible, even the elect. See, I have told you ahead of time. So if anyone tells you, "There he is, out there in the wilderness," don't go out. "Here he is in the inner room," do not believe it. For as lightning that comes from the east is visible even from the west, so will be the coming of the Son of Man. Wherever there is a carcass, there the vultures will gather. So a couple things to take away from this. So we got to watch out, because there's a reason why we can't just believe every voice that we hear, right? Because there are people out there that would deceive us. So we have to distinguish the real deal prophetic voice versus those false ones. But the good news is, it's not impossible to make that distinction, to discern what God's really trying to say and to distinguish between false teachers and true teachers. Jesus says, look, there's signs. You know when lightning strikes, right? You can see the vultures around the carcass. There are clues we can use to figure out who's the real deal. Does that make sense? So, the question about how to distinguish the prophetic voice, I've got three points for you, three points to discern. The first one is this one. You got to check yourself if you're going to distinguish the prophetic voice. You got to check yourself before you wreck yourself. Let me illustrate this point from this famous story from Luke 16. The time came where this beggar guy dies, right? There's the rich man and Lazarus. And Lazarus, the beggar, dies. And Lazarus, it goes a lot better for him in the afterlife than it does the rich man, right? And the rich man, says, "Hey, guys, can you help me?" And it's like, well, and Father Abraham says, "Well, you had your chance in this life, and Lazarus went out, and now the roles are reversed," right? And then the guy says this, the rich man speaking to Father Abraham, he says, "Then I beg you, Father, send Lazarus to my family, for I have five brothers. Let him warn them so that they will not also come to this place of torment." Abraham replied, "They have Moses and the prophets. Let them listen to them." "No, Father Abraham," he said, "but if someone from the dead goes to them, they will repent." He said to them, "If they do not listen Abraham responds, if they do not listen to Moses and the prophets, they will not be convinced, even if someone raises from the dead. If we're going to distinguish the prophetic voice, first we have to check ourselves to see if we're ready to hear it in the first place. Are you really listening, right? Because it's easy to play this kind of skeptic. Well, if only this were to happen, if I could have this miraculous sign, or maybe somebody from the dead were to come back. By the way, we did get that. We got Jesus back from the dead. We can always be so skeptical, pretending to be skeptical, that we keep moving the goalpost. If only you meet this criteria, then I'll listen to you. Oh no, now this criteria, and we keep moving the goalpost. So you're never going to hear the prophetic voice. You're never going to be able to distinguish it, even if it's the real deal, if you don't first check yourself. Am I really ready to receive this? Or are we going to be like this rich man and his brothers? It's not that God hasn't been trying to get the message through them. They might always have the excuse, well, why can't we get the message this way? The issue is, you're really not listening. So that's the first way we distinguish the prophetic voice. First, you have to check yourselves, because there is a difference between being a skeptic and being someone who is hard of heart. Okay. So second point I want to make about this, how do you distinguish the prophetic voice? Let's examine ourselves first to see, okay, am I really ready to hear something, even if it's something that's going to confront me, if it's news that I don't want to hear. The other way you distinguish between the prophetic voice and the counterfeit ones is you have to check their fruit. Now, what in the world do I mean by that? I get this idea from what Jesus says in Matthew chapter 7. Watch out for false prophets. This is how he describes them. They come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly they are ferocious wolves. By their fruit you will recognize them. Do people pick grapes from thorn bushes or figs from thistles? Likewise, every good tree bears good fruit, but a bad tree bears bad fruit. A good tree cannot bear bad fruit, and a bad tree cannot bear good fruit. Every tree that does not bear good fruit is cut down and thrown into the fire. Thus, by their fruit, you will recognize them. Man, fruit is in that passage a lot. But what is Jesus talking about there? What's this fruit he's speaking of, right? When you hear fruit, when Jesus is talking about this, by their fruit, you will recognize them. Think of fruit as being the effects of what these people are doing. What they're saying, what kind of impact does it have? What kind of consequences are there? What are the things that come with this supposed prophetic message? Because there can be good fruit and bad fruit. There can be good effects and bad effects, good consequences and bad consequences. We have examples of what bad consequences looks like. 2 Peter 2 says this way, there are people who promise freedom while they themselves are slaves of depravity, for people are slaves to whatever has mastered them. So if someone comes to you and says, come to me and I'll offer you freedom, but they themselves are a slave, that's a clue. You're not bearing the fruit of what your supposed message is. Now, Jesus has a lot of woes for false teachers and false prophets. And from Matthew 23, he gives us more ideas about this, kind of along the same lines from the 2 Peter 2 one about what kind of effect it has on their hearers. Jesus says this, woe to you, teachers of the law and Pharisees, you hypocrites! You shut the door of the kingdom of heaven in people's faces. You do not enter, nor will you let those who are trying to, nor will you let those enter who are trying to. So it seems like the one fruit for false teachers would be people who not only they don't have it themselves, but they want to keep it from other people. It being being able to participate in the kingdom of God, being able to enjoy that. Verse 15. Woe to you, teachers of the law, you Pharisees, you hypocrites! You travel over land and sea to win a single convert, and when you have succeeded, you make them twice as much a child of hell as you are. So not only is it bad fruit to drag somebody down with you, but they're even willing to, it seems, go to great lengths to make people worse than them, to ruin them. That's not good fruit. Jesus gives us more examples of what bad fruit is like. He says, they tie up heavy, cumbersome loads and put them on other people's shoulders, but they themselves are not willing to lift a finger to move them. This is really important that you do this. Are you going to do it? Nope. That's hypocritical. That's a fruit of a false teacher, a false prophet. Woe to you, teachers of the law and Pharisees, you hypocrites! You have neglected the more important matters of the law, justice, mercy, and faithfulness. You should have practiced the latter without neglecting the former. You blind guides, you strain out a gnat, but swallow a camel. So all those word pictures that Jesus pictured there with the gnat and the camel, it's like they've missed the forest through for the trees, right? And Jesus says, you want to have both. You want to see both the trees and the forest, right? But they're so caught up with like tithing a tenth of their spices, they've neglected the more important matters, things like mercy, justice, faithfulness. Jesus says, like, you should do both, but you've gotten so fixated on the little details that you've missed the big picture. And you're bogging people down, also getting them just engrossed in those little details. It's not that Jesus is against details. He wants us to both have a detail people and big picture people. But it's a fruit of a poor teacher who's just stuck on the little details and misses the big picture. He continues, everything they do is done for people to see. Woe to you, teachers of the law and Pharisees, you hypocrites! You clean the outside of the cup and dish, but inside they are full of greed and self-indulgence. In the same way, on the outside you appear to people as righteous, but in the inside you are full of hypocrisy and wickedness. So another fruit of false teachers, false prophets, is they're very concerned with their appearance. As a matter of fact, they're just concerned with their appearance. Right? They're not so much concerned with real transformation that happens inside, internal transformation. So these are all examples of what bad fruit is like, okay? And the fruit of what somebody's teaching, the consequences of what they preach and what they practice or don't practice, that's a big clue of whether they're the genuine article or not. Is God trying to say something through them, or what's this bad fruit? Maybe not. However, when we are talking about the prophetic voice, we talked about this in the last lesson. It's not about the messenger, it's about the message, okay? So this is why I have to make an important distinction here. I meant to make an important point. This is why I'm giving you 3 points about how to distinguish the prophetic voice. If we just focus on the fruit, we can get a little hung up on this, is that there are imperfect messengers, right? If you go looking for some bad fruit, you're going to find it somewhere if you want to find it. Does that make sense? If we're told something we don't want to hear, we're tempted to dismiss it. If we can't dismiss the truth of a message, sometimes we try to dismiss the trustworthiness of the messenger. If you can't get rid of the message, you attack the messenger. Does that make sense? So we're tempted to go looking for reasons to disqualify people, and it's not because we've made an objective, qualified decision. Ooh, there's some bad fruit. I reject you on that thing. It's we've made a predetermined decision to reject what they're saying, and we're looking for the justification. I don't want to hear what you're saying, so I'm going to find a way to dismiss you, even if it means attacking your person. See, here's the problem. Prophets aren't perfect people, except for one. Jesus was the perfect one. So if you're going to try to dig up dirt on somebody, you're going to find it. But even with Jesus, in the perfect case, people still tried to find dirt on him, right? They couldn't confront him on what he was saying, so they tried to attack him as a person. So let me flip the other side about this. The danger of dismissing people trying to find bad fruit. We see this in Jesus' own ministry. Well, there's a famous story of Jesus and his conversion with the Samaritan woman. She was another powerful evangelist that, like, after she talks with Jesus, she converts this whole city like Jonah. But you'll notice the thing that she gets tripped up on, she hears what Jesus is saying. She's like, wow, there's truth in that. But she has a hard time that it's Jesus that's the one that's saying it. She gets hung up on the messenger and not the message. The Samaritan woman said to him, you're a Jew and I am a Samaritan. How can you ask me for a drink? Jews don't associate with Samaritans. Oh, look at you, all high and mighty. Do you think you're greater than our father Jacob? Sir, I can see you're a prophet, but our ancestors worship on that mountain. But you Jews, you claim the place we must worship is Jerusalem. You see how she gets stuck on these things? She's having a hard time, not so much with the message, but the messenger. She eventually comes around to it. There's another passage from John that I really like, Jesus and the blind man of John chapter 9. And here's, I think, a very clear picture of folks who it seems like, well, here, let me start reading it, and then I'll pull out these points. John 9. So Jesus heals this man who's born blind, and they brought to the Pharisees the man who had been born blind. Now, some of the Pharisees said, "This man is not from God, for he does not keep the Sabbath," because Jesus healed the guy on the Sabbath. But others said, "How can a sinner perform such signs?" So they were divided. So it seems like we're off to a good start here, right? It seems like, ooh, something exciting happened, but is this from God or something else? Some people think that maybe it's not. Some people think that it is. They're divided. So it seems like they're going to do some discernment here. They're going to try to distinguish, is Jesus really coming from God, or is he a counterfeit in some way? Okay, so they turn again to the blind man. "What have you to say about him? It was your eyes he opened, after all." And the blind man replies, "He can recognize he is a prophet." It continues. A second time they summoned the man who had been born blind. "Give glory to God by telling the truth," they said. "We know this man is a sinner." Wait a minute. I thought you were trying to figure out if he was a man of God or a sinner or not. But it seems like you've already made the decision. I don't want to hear what this guy is saying, so I have to dismiss him. And so they're looking for the rationale to do that. "We know this man is a sinner," they said. He replied, "Listen, whether or not he's a sinner, I don't know. The blind man's still working out." But the blind man says, "One thing I do know, I was born blind, and now I see." They can't dismiss that. They can't dismiss the truth of his message, so they're trying to attack the messenger. Then they hurled insults at him and said, "You are this fellow's disciple. We are disciples of Moses." You see, now the blind man is accepting the truth of what Jesus is saying, so now they have to dismiss the man who was born blind. He's no longer blind. "We are disciples of Moses. We know that God spoke to Moses. But as for this fellow, we don't even know where he comes from." The man answered, "Now that is remarkable. You don't know where he comes from, yet he opened my eyes. If this man were not from God, he could do nothing." To this they replied, "You are steeped in sin at birth. How dare you lecture us?" And they threw him out. So I say this to say, I'm sorry, I know we got really into the weeds with this point. You have to judge people by their fruit to see the truthfulness and the trustworthiness of what they're saying. But you have to be careful that you haven't made the predetermined decision to dismiss what they're saying because you don't want to hear it and you're just looking for the rationale. Does that make sense? But still, judge people. You can judge a person's message by their by the fruit of it. It's a helpful clue. Okay? Matthew 23, verse 1. Jesus said to the crowd and to his disciples, "The teachers and of the law and the Pharisees sit in Moses' seat." And I find this so interesting what Jesus says here. "You must be careful to do everything they tell you, but do not do what they do, for they do not practice what they preach." Okay? Now, there's this phrase we're really familiar with. We're familiar with people saying things, "Practice what you preach," right? Or that's often like the telltale signs of a hypocrite, someone who doesn't practice what they preach. Here's really at the root and the heart of what hypocrisy is. Jesus has called these people hypocrites several times. It's not just that you don't practice what you preach. It's that you don't really believe it. The reason why you don't practice it is because you don't believe it, right? And one of the reasons this point is so tricky, because Jesus says, hey, they're all caught up in the little details and they've missed the big picture. But still, they've got a point about the details, but also get the big picture. What he says here, listen, they're hypocrites. They don't practice what they preach, but still do what they say, but not as they do, right? Does that saying remind you of anything else? Have you ever heard, I don't want to say your parents, but you're familiar with this scene of a parent saying to a child, "Do as I say, not as I do"? We're familiar with this, right? That's a very kind of powerful image, right? Now, if you ever heard something like that from the child's perspective, you know, that can be very intimidating because you can lobby this charge, and I think it sticks. I think it makes a lot of sense. You ruin your credibility if you do that. To say, you should do this thing, but I'm not going to practice it myself, ruins your credibility. That is a valid point. From the other side of it, though, the person that's like, hey, listen, I do this, but you shouldn't do this. There's also truth sometimes in what they're saying about, this is really bad, I'm having a hard time giving it up, please don't make the mistakes that I am, right? There's also truth from that side, right? And so I think what Jesus says here is actually so wise. When it comes to people who are false and counterfeit, sometimes Jesus says, don't follow their example, but follow the truth wherever you find it, even if hypocrites are the ones that are saying it sometimes. Does that make sense? Don't avoid the truth just because even hypocrites and false teachers and false prophets, occasionally they'll pick up, they say a lot of things. Occasionally they'll say something that's true, right? Don't dismiss the message then just because they don't practice it. Does that make sense? All right, so I want to get out of the reeds. That's the most difficult point, but I thought I could communicate it the best that I can, and you guys are smart. I hope you get something out of that. So I want to go to this last piece of advice when it comes to distinguishing the prophetic voice. You got to check yourself. You got to check the fruit. But this last one, check the message, I think is the most clearest, the most clear, and the most helpful to us. Now, this is the other passage that's already been read. But just to refresh your memory, 1 John 4, dear friends, do not believe every spirit. Test the spirits to see whether they are from God or not, because many false prophets have gone out into the world, and this is how you can recognize the Spirit of God. Every spirit that acknowledges that Jesus has come in the flesh is from God, but every spirit that does not acknowledge Jesus is not from God. This is the spirit of the Antichrist, which you have heard is coming, and even now is already in the world. You, dear children, are from God and have overcome them, because of the one who is in you is greater than the one who is in the world, right? So again, the thing about the prophetic voice, it's not about the messenger, it's about the message. So where the message is, to check that, that's to really get to the heart of the matter. And the good news is God doesn't just speak to us at like one time, right? God's spoken to us throughout time in history several times, right? And so we can remember back to the past ways that God has spoken to us, and we can use that. We can weigh it against what we're hearing now to see whether they line up, whether it correlates, whether what they're saying now corroborates with how we know God has spoken to us back then, right? So what 1 John's getting at here, there are those that acknowledge what God has already said, what God is already doing. The kind of spirits that acknowledge that Jesus has come in the flesh, that's how God's setting the world right, they're on the same page, right? There's truth to what they're saying. But there are other spirits out there that don't acknowledge that. That's a different message. That's a false message. And the good news here is that even though there are false prophets, false teachers out there that could mislead us, we can discern them. We can sniff them out. The one who overcame the world is in us, and he empowers us to make these distinctions, to distinguish these things. We can recognize the spirit of falsehood versus the spirit of truth, the spirit of God. It continues in 1 John. They are from the world and therefore speak from the viewpoint of the world, and the world listens to them. But we are from God, and whoever knows God listens to us. But whoever is not from God does not listen to us. This is how we recognize the spirit of truth and the spirit of falsehood. So, when you're thinking about how to distinguish the prophetic voice, check yourself, check the fruit, but about the check the message, we can familiarize ourselves with what the spirit of the world sounds like. And we can also familiarize ourselves with what the spirit of God sounds like. And when we hear a voice delivering a message that maybe we haven't heard before, or maybe a message that we need to hear for the first time that we just haven't heeded before, we can know which one it lines up against. Which one we can ask ourselves, does this voice correspond or contradict to how we know God has spoken to us in the past? Does this message promote things like the fruit of the Spirit, or does it promote things like the acts of the flesh? Does it have a concern for things like the poor and social justice, like the prophets often do? Or is it a voice that says something like, don't worry about poor people, just let them die? Is it a voice that affirms that God is saving the world through the work of Jesus versus, no, Jesus didn't come in the flesh. That's not how it works. You can check the message to see if it's the real deal. Okay, one last passage I want to read to you before we conclude. James 1. So what say you do these things? What say you've distinguished? Ooh, I think this is the real deal. I think God is trying to tell me something prophetically here. What do you do? So what say you do those things? Anyone who listens to the word and does not do what it says is like someone who looks at his face in a mirror and after looking at himself goes away and immediately forgets what he looks like. So let's say you're poised. All right, God, I'm ready to hear the message that you hear of me. And then you hear a message and you say, is this from God or is this from some other source? And you do some discernment and you distinguish that, like, yes, this message is from God. Very good. Now what do? Well, you got to do something. You got to apply it. You got to put it into practice, because if you don't, it's like, ooh, I can see myself so perfectly in a mirror. And then you walk away and completely forget what you just saw. This is what we're going to be talking about next week, so we'll pick it up. But just for now, I want you to remember this. Be listening for the prophetic voice. Be listening to what God might be trying to tell you. Don't be so quick to dismiss voices that you don't want to hear, because they're going to tell you something that you're going to feel convicted by, or just something that you don't want to hear. Don't believe everything, though. Distinguish between these different voices. Test the spirits. Test everything. Reject what is evil. Hold into what is good. And you have these tools at your disposal to do that. Check yourself. Check the fruits of the message, but check the message itself, and you'll be well equipped to distinguish the prophetic voice.